The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to CIO Talk Radio with your host, Sunjo Gall. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the host, guests, and callers. Here's Sunjo Gall.
Good morning and welcome to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Today's topic is, what's the state of state cybersecurity? Our guests for today's show are Doug Robinson, who's the Executive Director for National Association of State CIOs. Hello, Doug. How are you doing?
Doing well, Sanjo. Good morning.
Very good morning to you too, sir. Now, we also have Chris Busey, who's the Chief Information Security Officer for the state of Minnesota. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
How's life there at Minneapolis?
It's excellent. Beautiful out today.
Okay. You're talking about rain and snow?
A little bit of snow, but overall it's pretty nice.
Very good. So how is the state of cybersecurity?
Well, it's interesting because we just held an executive awareness event here in the state of Minnesota, and we called it actually the state of the state. And I thought it was important for us in the state of Minnesota to make people understand what we've done, where we're going. But we started off the event by answering that very question deductively. And what we told folks in the audience is that the first thing that was important to understand is that the threat landscape that we face is much more hostile and much more sophisticated than it's ever been. And overall, government leaders are doing their best to address those threats. But it's important for people to understand as well that there is a significant gap between where we are today from a cybersecurity perspective and where we think we need to be. And some of the evidences of that is that we still have a lot of serious audit findings that are showing up in the external audits of our government. We still have an organization that's highly siloed, meaning there's a lot of haves and have-nots. And one thing that's important to recognize is that we accept risk by default in many cases rather by choice. And those are some of the things that we're going to be trying to change with our new program.
Now, Doug, you go ahead and really get the privilege and of dealing with state leadership, IT leadership in particular, of course, with IT security as well. What is your overall impression? On an average, are we in a less than desirable state or much less than or a pathetic state of affairs when it comes to IT security or cybersecurity in particular?
I think at this point we're certainly at a less than desirable state. As someone once said, maybe it's better to be lucky than be good. And I think in some cases the states have been lucky to date. We haven't had massive challenges. We've had incidents in each state, constant barrage of threats, as Chris mentioned, on a daily basis, thousands of scans, thousands of network probes, potential incidents, browser hijacks, and malware. So every state, as any large industrial-scale organization is dealing with, I think the difference is the state organization, the decentralized nature of state government. It's a house with many, many windows, and you're relying on all the agencies to keep those windows shut down tight, and that is a challenge. So we've talked about this at the NASIO level for many years, and produced a lot of research and policy and issue briefs on this area. And it's really just the nature of the landscape in that it's a real challenge because of the silos, as Chris mentioned, and the challenge of compliance. And probably for CIOs and for CISOs, a major challenge is simply getting the investment. It's the executive-level awareness of the nature of this problem, from protecting the critical infrastructure of state government. And then once you get that executive level awareness, can you get the investment? Can you get the buy-in for the resources necessary? And that is a continuing challenge of states.
Now, with respect to investment, how about us not trying to build a Mercedes in the first place? How about a Chevrolet or even a pull cart when it comes to preparedness for cybersecurity? Are we even at a pull cart level yet?
I'd say it's uneven across the states. Some states have done a very good job. They've received the investments. They've gotten the attention. And others, it is uneven, and that's one of the challenges that we see out there is the uneven level and the inconsistent level of investment across the state. So it certainly isn't very homogeneous when it comes to the state cybersecurity preparedness.
So, Chris, a question for you just to follow up on the same question I asked Doug. If suppose you don't have the desired level of funding, could we not even have a duct tape and shoestring level security preparedness, and then as we keep getting incremental or we get creative working with the CIO to get the funding produced out of the overall IT budget, slowly but surely, we could convert that into a Chevrolet and finally someday you'll get a Mercedes. But instead of waiting for that Mercedes level funding, we would be always in a very, very pathetic state of affairs overall, not even have a pull cart level security preparedness.
Well, I agree, and I think Doug's answer was right on the mark when you assess the states overall. But there are a lot of things that can be done to get a program up and running that don't require a lot of upfront investment. I think one of the things that's most important to do to really get your program to where it needs to be is to work hard with your community to figure out what does the future need to look like someday. And that's something... for us, since we're a brand new enterprise security program, we've been in existence now about 3 years. One of the things that we've been focusing on is trying to figure out what is the future going to look like. So it didn't take us a lot of money to really bring all the people from government together and lay out a 5-year strategic plan that really identifies where do we want to be, what are the outcomes that we want to see 5 years down the road. And now we're working on breaking that that plan into a new tactical plan that we released, which is a 2-year document. But one of the things that's interesting, if you don't have a plan and you can't articulate in writing where you want to be down the road, it's very difficult to go to leaders to get funding. So I think that's one of the things that I would encourage all states to do, and in fact all governments, is that if you really wanted to make a business case and get funding and make leaders understand, you have to come on board with a written plan that they can read, and it helps them understand where you really need to go and why it's important to get there.
So if I were to sit on the other side of the table, which is the people who have the checkbook, do they not get it? Or don't they have the money? Or they just simply don't feel the business case which has been presented is compelling enough for them to take a portion of the funds that they have, which could be otherwise allocated to other programs, could be allocated to security?
Sanjo, I think it's a crisis of prioritization in many cases. Chris is right. If you lay it out and you make the strong business case, in many instances, you're depending on a lot of moving parts. But as we see in governments in general, particularly state governments, sometimes it takes an incident, it takes an emergency, it takes a real kick in the pants to get attention. And that's certainly what you don't want in the cybersecurity. You don't want to have a major incident. You don't want to have a disruption of service. You don't want to have a major data breach that causes the state to really stand up and pay attention. So, but that's again the nature of government is getting that. So as we've been looking at this, and certainly have been advocating, is we talk about a crisis of prioritization. The funds may be there, but they just haven't been prioritized. Because there isn't a really good understanding that states really do run on IT, and they rely on IT as part of the fabric of government to deliver critical citizen services, and so there's a lot at stake if those services are disrupted, if emergency communications during any event are disrupted, if communication with the state government in terms of email and their websites and the various service channels they have are disrupted. So that becomes a real issue when you're building the business cases, how to really explain that in terms that can be well understood.
So what are some of the answers that you would actually receive from these folks who have the checkbooks when you go out to them and seek this funding to get going with the security initiatives. What do they say, essentially?
Well, I think I can give an example in our environment, because this is something that that I've been going through. And I think one of the things that's interesting in state government is that the first business case that you have to make is internally, typically within the executive branch of government. So the first thing that needs to be done in our environment is to convince the commissioners, the governor, and the executive level leaders of the state government that security is important and that it's important enough to actually fund. But once you get out of that executive branch arena, you're not done yet, because you typically then have to go into a legislative arena, which really does hold the keys to the kingdom, and you have to convince policymakers, both in the Senate and the House of Representatives, that security is important as well. And most of these folks that were elected to be legislative leaders probably have a lesser understanding of cybersecurity issues than the folks in the executive branch. So there's two challenges that you face. There's first the executive, then you have to get into the legislative branch, and all of these folks need to be convinced that cybersecurity is important enough to fund. But even stepping back and expanding a little bit on Doug's answer about is there enough money in the pool, I think it's difficult for people, for citizens particularly, to say that there's not enough money in the pool. Because if you look at a small state like Minnesota, where we have a general fund of 30-some billion dollars, and then you look across all the fund types that comprise the state of Minnesota, we have over $50 billion in financial activity on the revenue side and on the expenditure side. Now, granted, this is broken up into a lot of different agencies and a lot of different buckets and a lot of different silos. But when it comes right down to it, you think about it, we're a $50 billion organization. It's really difficult to go to citizens and explain to them that there's not enough money to do cybersecurity when the pool is really that large. It's really a matter for us to figure out how to prioritize and to make this important and figure out what the right investment justification is.
And you're always in a competition as you're making those decisions, particularly in today's fiscal environment. With the current budget situation and the revenue shortfalls that continue to present themselves to the states, and we certainly see that over the next year. States generally lag in terms of coming out of a recovery because of revenue receipts lagging. So that's going to be a challenge, is continuing, even in today's fiscal environment, to get the politicians to understand that that they still need to invest in these areas. While they're making tough decisions about cutting funding to human services and education, labor areas, and unemployment, this is a competitive environment, and security is competing. Cybersecurity investments are competing with all those very visible and politically challenging decisions that they have to make.
Let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back after these messages and explore why are we, are we paranoid, or, of course, to what extent we can secure, because we can never be secure enough. And if at all there are supposed to be holes, which are tiny holes, which we don't know where they are, and we are unaware of those, and we are afraid of the unknown, that's one approach. Or another is to know that these are big holes that have to be plugged, but we are not able to. That's a different type of a risk. So where do we stand with both types of security risk, and why are we giving so much emphasis, and what are the ripple effects of us not securing every day? Please stay tuned. We'll be right back and discuss.
Up-to-date business and financial news. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790.
The experts are here.
Voice America Business Network.
Looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.aval.com today. Aval helps companies find the global IT talent they need to align their IT and business objectives. Whether it's hiring top IT leadership talent or building a reliable technology team, Aval delivers. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, delivering global IT talent. That's www.aval, A-V-V-A-L, aval.com. Visit today.
As a Chicago-based IT leader, MC Plus A has helped hundreds of organizations to more effectively manage their information assets. Through premier partnerships with Google, ConnectBeam, and others, we're helping clients see strong ROIs in enterprise search, Web 2.0, and other productivity-boosting solutions. In these tough times, you need a partner you can trust, a thought leader with strong alliances and innovative solutions. You need MC Plus A. Visit us on the web at mcplusa.com. That's mcplusa.com.
Are you ready to grow your business? Listen for the Independent Business Owners Show with your coach, Rick Corrado. This entertaining talk radio program will bring you the tools to help increase your business. You'll learn sales success, time management, lead generation, business development, life balance, and much more. Rick Corrado is here to help you take your business to the next level. Listen for the Independent Business Owners Show, heard live every Monday morning at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Network.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjo Gall.
Welcome back. So, you know, some say that there's a lot of hype about cybersecurity. Why are people so paranoid? So I think it would help if we could figure out, is this because we have a bunch of little holes that we have missed and we don't know where they are, so that's why we have the fear of the unknown, or there are actual gaping holes which we know exist and we are not getting the funding to plug them. Where is the paranoia originating from? Chris, you want to take this?
Sure. Well, first off, I don't think that we're being over-paranoid about cybersecurity. I think for, you know, the common man on the street, you look at the news every night, and the events are real. There's, you know, people are constantly being bombarded with information about data loss and identity theft, and security is in the news, and it's real stuff. So I think that we're certainly not being over-paranoid. But with that said, I'm also not convinced that that all of the threats that we're portraying are things that really need to be worried about at the state level as well. I think, you know, people, there's a lot of fear, uncertainty, and doubt that's being used inappropriately, you know, trying to sell the case for cybersecurity. So I think the challenge that we have to do is figure out, well, what's the real risk posture that we're willing to live with for our state government and communicate that risk posture to our leaders and not try and sell them on the fact that cyber terrorists are going to come into our state and take over the world and some of those kind of things.
So Doug, in your view, given that Chris has a paid role and so does many of his counterparts, so do many of his counterparts in other states. That means people, the government does understand the requirement that there has to be someone who's championing the security and making sure that everything is in place. But yet you're like tying somebody's hands behind their back and saying, go do the job or go fight the war. Is that where you see we are?
No, I don't. In some cases, it is clear that they're the challenge is just because of the nature of government. It makes the CISO job very challenging because they may be dealing with other branches of government. They're dealing with other elected officials that don't, you know, they're not in direct line of authority to the executive branch. As Chris mentioned, you've got to start with the executive branch and building that business case, and you have obviously many others in state government that you have to deal with. And in some cases, the CIOs have responsibility for even K through 12 education and higher education under their infrastructure. And so provides, you know, a very heterogeneous environment that's, it can be awful challenging. So even with the right resources, you have to be able to, you know, document your need. And as I say to folks, sometimes you get the "you're not the boss of me" response. That's the answer you get from the agency as you're trying to promote, let's say, compliance with a security framework or security architecture that you know is in the best interest of the state. So you have to work through all of those. But I think what Chris said is exactly right on. What you want to do you want to conduct a regular cybersecurity risk assessment and prioritize those risks so that you're really focusing on what's critical and important that presents the greatest risk to the state. Because there's a threat levels every single day are pretty staggering for many states.
So, Chris, if I were to come to you and say, let's inventory the top 10 or top 5 threats that you're most concerned about, and if you were to take that and compare against a common denominator across multiple states, do you see a commonality, or everybody has their own set of pet peeves and or fears to deal with?
My guess is that all states would probably, if we put us all together in a room, we'd probably come up with a list that was very similar. You know, data loss and identity theft would probably be on the top of the list as some of the things that people are worried about the most.
Okay, so you're saying data loss and identity theft.
Right. We obviously take the pulse of the membership on a regular basis, and we did conduct kind of a straw man survey of CISOs and CIOs just a few months ago and asked them to identify where their priorities are in terms of cybersecurity. And data classification, data protection was right up there at the top, along with protecting the critical IT infrastructure. And I think along with Chris's comments about having a plan, that was also a top five response, is the need for a comprehensive security plan, a security architecture, a set of compliance policies, and then making sure that you match that with ongoing employee and contract awareness and training. Obviously, the nature of celebrating and recognizing October as National Cybersecurity Awareness Month is the recognition that we need greater awareness about the nature of this problem without being paranoid. And I really don't think that the states are really all that paranoid about it. They're simply acknowledging the threat.
So data loss and identity theft, these are, of course, known to us as problems for quite a few years. Now, when did you see, Chris, in your organization, these are the top priorities, and what are your set of specific steps that you may have taken to start fighting with those, and what are your stumbling blocks which are preventing you from being in that desirable state today?
Okay. Good question. Well, when I first started as the Chief Information Security Officer for our state, I knew that we needed to put in place the decision-making process and a governance structure so that we could actually make enterprise-wide decisions and put the prioritization and the plans in place so that we all agreed, you know, what the marching orders would be. But at the same time, we had some of those fires that were burning. In fact, I believe it was the very first day I started, and our government hadn't even given me my first paycheck, and I was already on the news dealing with stolen laptops and data loss and some of those issues. In fact, I think it was twice in the first week that I started. And so we started by putting out some of those big fires that were out there. I believe we were one of the first states in the nation that required full laptop encryption on all government computers that house not public data. We also took an aggressive stance on the use of email and email encryption. So we started off before even laying out the long-term plan by helping put in place some processes to fight the fires that were burning.
Okay. Okay, I think I lost Chris. Doug, are you there?
I am.
I am still here, too.
Okay. So I just wanted to understand, like, so what you did there is fine. So how is that whole plan working?
Well, right now we laid out the strategic plan, and we laid out our outcomes in three broad categories. First of all, we felt that it was imperative for us to figure out a way to improve our situational awareness, things that include such as continuous system monitoring and assessment of controls. We also put together a series of strategic outcomes on proactive risk management, such as articulating our requirements and ongoing security training, some proactive tools. And then we also put in place a series of outcomes on robust crisis and security incident management. And from there, we broke those broad outcomes down into more measurable projects that we could work on, putting in place things such as in the situational awareness area, starting to work on better intrusion detection and prevention processes government-wide, security information and event management, just a few examples. And to further that, for examples, like in the program, in a proactive risk management category, one thing that was really, really important to us was to get a handle on managing vulnerabilities a lot better than we had in the past. What we found when we came in, and even in our central technology agency, which I sit in, is that when we went out and did assessments of a lot of our computer systems, we had a lot of vulnerabilities in our environment that were going unremediated because we didn't have the right people, processes, and tools in place. So we wanted to figure out a way to manage vulnerabilities proactively across the whole organization so that we could get to the point where we didn't find out about vulnerabilities when they were exploited by hackers. We wanted to find the vulnerabilities ourselves. We wanted to classify the vulnerabilities, and we wanted to fix those vulnerabilities and remediate the issues before they were taken advantage of. And we wanted to do that whole thing on an ongoing, recurring, cyclical basis with a cycle that had to repeat, we felt, no more frequently than no less frequently than weekly. So it's just a few examples of how we took the high-level plans, broke it down into tactics and projects, and are actually implementing them now in our government.
Let's take a quick break, listeners, and we'll be right back after these messages. And Chris, I'd like to ask a follow-up question. So you had a number of small projects or a big projects among those, which you had planned out, and you've started executing those. Which ones did get the blessing? Which ones are still waiting for attention? And then Doug, would love to understand that the way Chris has explained about what he did, is that common across the board, or are there some commonality across the board, and are other states also having issues with getting funding for the similar types of projects? So what's the standard, or what's the commonality, or the, you know, common denominator across the board on that front? Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Whether the market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.aval.com today. Aval helps companies find the global IT talent they need to align their IT and business objectives. Whether it's hiring top IT leadership talent or building a reliable technology team, Aval delivers. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, delivering global IT talent. That's www.aval, A-V-V-A-L, aval.com. Visit today.
As a Chicago-based IT leader, MC Plus A has helped hundreds of organizations to more effectively manage their information assets. Through premier partnerships with Google, ConnectBeam, and others, we are helping clients see strong ROIs in enterprise search, Web 2.0, and other productivity-boosting solutions. In these tough times, you need a partner you can trust, a thought leader with strong alliances and innovative solutions. You need MC Plus A. Visit us on the web at mcplusa.com. That's mcplusa.com.
Do you need directions to solid financial future? If so, the Money Answers Show with Jordan Goodman will provide you with a roadmap to making smart money decisions in every area of your personal finances. Join Jordan every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 3 p.m. Eastern, for the Money Answers Show on the Voice America Business Channel. Learn how and where to get the best deals on mortgages, cars, and insurance. Find out the best ways to save for college and retirement. Get out of debt, improve your credit rating, and save on your taxes. The Money Answers Show with Jordan Goodman will provide you with great tips on investment opportunities in real estate, stocks, annuities, and other investment vehicles. That's the Money Answers Show with Jordan Goodman on the Voice America Business Channel every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjoy Gall.
Welcome back. So, Chris, you had outlined a number of initiatives that you had planned for, and now you're working your plan, basically executing those projects. So when it comes to funding and or blessing from all constituents who are supposed to be involved in this, including your IT and government leadership, which ones got the blessing, which ones were made to wait? And based on the fact that they were made to wait, what is the impact?
Well, first of all, before I answer that specific question, in our state, one of the things that I think we've been blessed with is we do have some general funding for security, where we're not going up on a project-by-project basis, you know, asking for specific money to fund specific projects. We have a little bit more flexibility than that because we were able to secure some general fund money from our legislature. But the way things that have worked now with some of our projects is that we have a statewide information security council that we created as part of our governance process. And when we put our long-term strategic plan in place and our tactical plan in place, it was at that point when we decided what were the things that we think we really needed to press forward with, what were the most serious problems we needed to address, and we worked on projects in those areas. And then other projects that we thought were still important but were lower priorities, those are the things that were really moved to the back burner or handled differently. So, for example, with our enterprise vulnerability and threat management system, we really felt that removing as many vulnerabilities out of our environment was in all of our best interests. We know that there's lots of different threats, and the threats constantly change. But all of those threats, at one point or another, they seem to hang on vulnerabilities and exploit vulnerabilities to expose themselves in our environment. So we wanted to address the vulnerability problem proactively, and we developed an enterprise-wide solution, one system that's built out of our central IT organization, the Office of Enterprise Technology, and it's simply used by all agencies now to do continuous monitoring and scanning of their entire IT environment. And that's one system that we wanted to get completely built out across all of our government, plus all of higher ed in our government as well. And that's one project that we prioritized at the top of our list. We also had other projects that we felt were really important and we needed to make progress on that we couldn't go at with that level of effort. So, for example, with intrusion detection and prevention and security information and event management, we knew that we needed to make progress in this two-year period, but we simply weren't going to have the fiscal wherewithal to actually do those projects enterprise-wide. So what we're doing is we're doing piloting those technologies in a series of data centers, trying to get good at using and managing that technology, knowing full well that eventually we're going to be probably moving toward data center consolidation, and we were going to need to be really good at those technologies. So So the plan is in place and where we need to go, and the tactics are in place based on the resources that we have. But one thing that we've communicated all along, particularly with our Enterprise Security Strategic Plan, the outcomes that we want to achieve in the five-year horizon of that plan will never change. The tactics that we may have in our tactical plan will change based on the resources at our disposal. So that's really what we're balancing right now, is that we all know where we need to go. We know what the Holy Grail is. How we get there and how long it takes is really a function of the resources in our environment. And so that's where we're adjusting the tactical plan collectively with our community to get to that point.
So, Doug, based on what Chris outlined as a set of projects that were undertaken and the value delivered, plus the ones which are holy grails, and we are still waiting for with a five-year plan in place, where do you see the overarching impact on an individual state or the nation's cybersecurity levels because of the fact that you have to wait that long to get that highly mission-critical type of project underway, and it'll take 5 years or so? We've given ourselves 5 years to make that happen. We might be losing quite a bit in these 5 years then.
Well, I think it's certainly possible, and I think the challenge is, as Chris mentioned on the tactical side, is that the nature of the threats, external threats particularly out there, are changing on a regular basis. They're morphing. And so it's going to be unpredictable. And so even what you have done today may not be resilient enough to withstand some new attack that comes tomorrow, particularly with the exploits that are out there. But I think what he's outlined is again, the type of guidance that we provide all states, which is do the risk assessment, look at the vulnerabilities, and start with those major vulnerabilities. And clearly what states know is that areas of configuration management, the software vulnerabilities from unpatched client software that's out there, because states have a huge investment in all these software applications at the desktop and in the data center. And in state CIOs, their number one priority for the last couple of years has been consolidation of the infrastructure, the data center, the resources that they have, and part of the business driver behind that consolidation is securing the assets. So that's kind of a multi-pronged effort. They're also trying to consolidate that. But I think that having a recognizing what those priorities are and working those, particularly at protecting the critical infrastructure piece, is really the kind of the best effort that states can do. Because they do have to do those investments very wisely. Chris mentioned general fund dollars, and certainly a number of states have general fund dollars for fairly widespread enterprise response, such as network monitoring and intrusion detection. But when you get down to the fiscal impact on individual agencies, when you mandate, as he mentioned, full disk encryption for laptops. Well, if the CIO organization doesn't have the funding to require that, that's when you're going to have the gap. The agencies are going to come back and say, well, we haven't accommodated that in our budget. We have literally hundreds of laptops out there, and you're asking us now to go out and acquire a full disk encryption solution to protect that data. So unless there's a resource coming somewhere, they're going to have to beg, borrow, and steal from other sources. And that's when you create the kind of tension. Many state CIOs do not get that level of enterprise funding to handle agency-level compliance at the tactical level. So there's certainly, as we've seen out there, states are a repository of a lot of personal identifiable information and confidential information, and that presents a great risk when you have data on the move on laptops and it's not protected. So that risk exists today. There's no doubt about that.
Have you ever evaluated the overall cost of that risk? What is that costing us?
We haven't evaluated the risk. We did evaluate several months ago. We asked the states to give us the delta, and by that we were looking for what their current level of funding was in the cybersecurity space and what they believe to be the necessary funding, the delta between their as-is and then their to-be environment. As Chris mentioned, kind of predicting to the future. And it was a little bit under $5 billion for the U.S. states. The ones that responded, and I can't say we had all states respond, but I don't know the number off the top of my head. But there's certainly a major gap in what is needed, what at least the CIOs believe is needed to have a very robust security posture across their states.
So the tangible and intangible costs of risk, Chris, for example, in your department, because you're handling it, you're in the very thick of things, are you able to take that tangible number and show it to the right people that here is the cost of you not giving me the resources to put the risk in, to basically mitigate or remove that risk?
No, I'm not able to actually quantify in numerical terms. You know, if you don't give us the security money, here's what's going to happen because of that. And I think that's one of the overarching problems of security as a whole. You're paying money. It's basically like buying insurance. So we're paying money to put in place controls so bad things don't happen. The problem is if bad things don't happen, you can't really attribute those bad things not happening to the security spend decisively. So that's one of the issues, that's one of the problems that we have in the cybersecurity world, is it's difficult to calculate ROI. And in fact, I think it's virtually impossible. The numbers are really soft that are used. You know, what are the probabilities of not having a major data breach because you did not spend money on laptop encryption? So to give a more concrete example, in our state, I believe that we have now between 25 and 30,000 laptops that have been encrypted with full disk encryption solutions. And to the best of my knowledge now, since we've adopted that policy, we have not had to do any data breach notification because of, data that's been lost on these lost or stolen laptops. The thing I can't tell you is that precisely how many episodes did we mitigate because of this, and then what was the potential cost that we avoided because of putting this solution in place? We simply know that we spent upwards of, $750,000 to put this solution in place.
Let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back after these messages. And, Chris, I'd like to ask you this a follow-up question. In a private sector, like suppose, financial services firms or an e-commerce firm where identity theft or data loss are equally important, and they do get a heavy amount of funding to plug those holes because there is an actual tangible cost if those holes are not plugged. So how is that calculation any different from what the government has as a challenge? Is that at a lower level? Is the severity of risk is measured at a totally different level, or they have better formulas to show a business case which gets them the funding? So if you have had a chance to talk to any of your counterparts in the private sector, or if you have any examples, listeners would love to listen. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Whether the market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.avol.com today. Avol helps companies find the global IT talent they need to align their IT and business objectives. Whether it's hiring top IT leadership talent or building a reliable technology team, Avol delivers. To find out how Avol can help your company, visit www.avol.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Avol, delivering global IT talent. That's www.avol, A-V-V-A-L, avol.com. Visit today.
As a Chicago-based IT leader, MC Plus A has helped hundreds of organizations to more effectively manage their information assets. Through premier partnerships with Google, ConnectBeam, and others, we are helping clients see strong ROIs in enterprise search, Web 2.0, and other productivity-boosting solutions. In these tough times, you need a partner you can trust, a thought leader with strong alliances and innovative solutions. You need MC Plus A. Visit us on the web at mcplusa.com. That's mcplusa.com.
Self-leadership is more important than corporate leadership. In the hustle and bustle world we live in, we need to be reminded that in all failures and successes, we are the common denominators. Each week, let Daniel Gutierrez help bring you the tools you need to manage self-leadership, resulting in self-success. Make your mark in your industry. Make sure you listen to Right Here, Right Now, every Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjay Gall.
Welcome back. So, Chris, coming back to you about the private sector, how is the security any different for them with respect to severity of risk and complexity, et cetera? Are they getting bigger checks? Are they getting bigger funding? What's the difference, and how come they are able to get away with getting their security holes plugged?
Well, I think going back to the original question, the private sector has the same issues measuring return on investment that government does. It's the same problem that it's difficult to measure tangible values by putting in place security controls. In fact, in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, we're very fortunate to have a Chief Security Officers Forum, which includes myself and a lot of the CSOs from the Fortune 500 companies in our area. And we talked about this very issue several meetings ago, and everybody has the same challenges that we do. Difficult to justify security spending in quantifiable terms.
So, Doug, the question I would also have is with respect to the mobility that we all want. Everybody wants BlackBerry and all other PDAs and laptops included. How has that further made the situation with respect to cybersecurity any more complex than it already was? And what are we doing with respect to, we already had a problem dealing with existing issues, and there comes mobility.
Yes, exactly. So now you've got state data on the move, and it really gets back to including those devices and again, the continued advancement of those devices into your overall security framework and making sure that you don't miss those folks out there. One is just asset management. And I think a lot of states struggle with that, just knowing what they have out there in the mobile area, whether it's a laptop or a PDA. We now have, smartphones that have, 2 and 3 gigabyte chips in them and SD drives. I think that's a real challenge because you have now a proliferation of all these devices in media, and they're out there, and not only do they want to, not only do they have state data on them, in many cases that's a compliance issue, but they also are connecting into wireless networks, and those networks can be unsecure, so you have to have a set of policies. So I think, again, back to some of the base items, knowing what you have in terms of asset control, setting standards, having configuration management and then making sure that the agencies are complying with that are all the major challenges. And quite frankly, it can be very difficult to enforce, particularly if you have mobile field workers and remote workers, workers that are teleworking now. Many states are promoting teleworking and mobile environment as a way to not only increase productivity but reduce cost and save energy. So it's a tough one. And if you look at the environment out there, about how many hundreds of laptops are lost or stolen each day, that's why that full disk encryption that Chris mentioned is critical to make sure that you have some configuration in place. So, I mean, the mobile workforce is definitely growing, so security has they have to kind of bake that in from the beginning and not make it an afterthought, because by that point it's probably too late. And it's certainly the evidence in the number of incidents out there in the states, particularly with laptops, it demonstrated that that's one of the most vulnerable areas and a very high-risk area.
So what's the magic bullet you have, Chris, to handle this?
Well, I don't have a magic bullet, but I think the good news is that this is an issue that we discussed in detail with our Information Security Committee Council, and one of the conclusions that we came to is that we want to be able to say yes, because mobile devices, they're going to be the future of IT, and we have to accept the fact that we need to figure out ways to secure those devices, and we think that we can do it and maintain a reasonable level of risk. Primarily, the issues that we're concerned about are data loss, both from lost devices and with data lost in transit to the devices. And we think that we can put in place controls and policies to provide an acceptable level of risk for mobile devices. One of the things that's interesting, though, is that the issues that are a lot tougher out there are the non-security issues, such as e-discovery of data on devices that may not be within our secure confines anymore, and freedom of information requests. I kind of get the sense that a lot of the people that have to address those issues, which are the non-security issues, really wanted me as the CISO to say, no, just don't do it. There's too many security risks, because I think their issues are a lot tougher than the ones that we have to address from the security perspective.
Okay, so now comes Mr. Healthcare IT. You know, this is another challenge that you have, which is a lot of work. And are we biting more than we can chew? We did not have enough funds or other things that we were trying to do, and good news seems to be that at least Healthcare IT is getting some allocated funds, and hopefully you'll be able to do it. But do you have the resources to make all this happen? Chris?
Well, the way I look at anything that's any kind of type of new projects that come into our environment, whether it's healthcare IT, in our environment, we're also putting in a statewide ERP system right now. There's a lot of these kind of things that are happening. And I look at them not as problems, but as real opportunities for us to get involved in these projects, to put the security controls in place, and to start building a new IT infrastructure that has the right controls baked in from the onset. So all of these things, particularly those that come with a big check with them, give us an opportunity to move our security program further than it's ever been in the past. It's difficult to address the security problems in the house that's already built. I mean, when we look at the house and say after the fact that you don't have any bathrooms, there's not enough money to go back and retrofit things. But all of these new initiatives are a great opportunity to figure out how we address our continuity of operations issues and disaster recovery and identity and access management and everything else. So I look at them as great opportunities for us.
And I think that we're going to have to address the security and privacy concerns and data interoperability right up front with healthcare and health information exchanges, because this is a top public policy priority for the governors, you know, in terms of looking. Obviously, right now they're dealing with budget issues and the fiscal crisis, but they all know that their number one item on their list, because of the role of state government and the complexity of this whole area, is dealing with the cost of health care and the quality of health care, the delivery of health care to their citizens. And so we're going to have to deal with this one. And, you know, we know security and privacy can be a real showstopper from adoption and from consumer use. But we're going to have to face up to it, because the opportunities and the cost savings and the quality issues are too important. So that's something that that every state CIO understands, is the importance of this. It now is consuming more than 20% of every state budget, just dealing with health care and Medicaid. So it's an area that is a top priority, and the CIOs and others are going to have to obviously jump in there and be part of the game.
On behalf of the show and our listeners, I'd really like to thank you, Doug and Chris, for sharing your thoughts about what is the current state of the state cybersecurity and what are some of the plans that we could put in place to make things happen and hopefully have a better state going forward.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank your audience.
Thank you so much. Now, cybersecurity is, of course, a top and a very serious concern. However, it seems like the current state is much less than desirable. So for many, it is not a priority. For others, it is a formidable task and almost an untamable beast. So problem seems to be lying in the implementation of those policies and procedures, standards, and or best practices, or even plans and projects that we've put in place. We don't have enough grants available for various initiatives, and if we do, the adherence to the security standards is not actually a mandatory element, so it just goes by the wayside. So we appeal to the IT leadership in various state governments to take a second look at the state of cybersecurity in their respective states, and if possible, take proactive measures to ensure that they are not the weakest link. Thank you again for listening to CIO Talk Radio. This is Sanjay Agarwal, your talk show host. Till next week, take care and God bless.
Thank you for tuning in to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Join Sanjay Agarwal next Wednesday at 9 a.m. Central, 7 a.m. Pacific for another hour of CIO Talk Radio.